This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to the Brad and Chad Show here on the Place to Be Nation Network. And now your hosts, Brad Woodling and Chad Campbell. Walking on a dream.
Good evening and welcome to a special. What is this? It's not two people talking about the greatest wrestler ever for 10 hours. This is the Brad and Chad Show, even more anticipated than the greatest wrestler ever countdown. We are back. I am on location in beautiful Cordele, Georgia, to bring you to you this podcast. And, you know, what would a Brad and Chad Show be without one of us not being here? So Brad, of course, is not here. But I do have a pretty good replacement in JT Rosero. How are you doing today, JR, JT, Justin, the man of many names these days?
Are you sure you're calling from a hotel? It sounds like you're calling from like the cruise ship you were on a few weeks ago, just yelling out into the sea.
I'm on the starboard side currently.
There's a rich PTBN history of cruises. You know what I mean? Like, if it all started with Scott back in 2011, going on his cruise when CM Punk broke the internet and broke the world, and then Brad went and you went right when we launched the site. They're always well timed in our lives, and then we go to WrestleMania, and you're on the cruise, and cruises and PTBN go together well, just like me and you do, Chad. So I'm very excited here to be here tonight.
Cruises are a lot of fun. We just got to get you on a big boat next time there's some big wrestling news, and then we'll be all set. The circle will be complete.
As long as Cruise is on there, I'm happy.
Crispy. I never understood that. Okay, our first sidetrack. So, Crispy doesn't sound like a great nickname for Cruise.
No, not unless your last name is Crispolo, you know. Mr. Crispolo, I didn't call him Crispy.
Crispy.
Yeah, that's a weird name.
But what we're doing tonight, this is kind of an impromptu podcast to take the place of the Dangerous Alliance podcast this week on hiatus.
Yeah, some technical issues on Will's end, so we'll hopefully be back soon, but he's got some computer problems. So.
Right, so we're kind of ragtagging it together tonight, and I came up with a brilliant idea. I guess this is sort of in the same vein of the Live Watch. Maybe a little bit of a Mystery Titans Theater mixed in, but what me and Justin are going to attempt to do is we've got YouTube pulled up. We are going to name a wrestler on a countdown just randomly. Neither of us knows who the other is going to name. We'll put that into the search bar, and then we'll see what results we get pulled up and pick a match to watch that way. So are you ready for our first wrestler shout-out? And just a qualification, I'm not going to be naming out, you know, Jumbo Saruta or Negro Casas or any insane wrestlers. This will be a mainstream list, if you will.
So. Yeah, we'll do that. And then if you guys want to watch along out there and you listen, and I'm sure just knowing Chad and I's friendship is going to be going in many wild directions and probably very little talk about the match.
I would definitely say this will not be a supplement of watching the match, because there's a good indication you may be hearing more about baseball and basketball scores that are going on more than the actual match. But
and me yelling at Chad about not being caught up on the Americans, so we can't talk about it here.
Yeah, well, come on. I've been on cruises.
Guys, are you ready to go? Behind and been on a cruise. Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
All right, so I'm going to count us down 3, 2, 1, and then name a wrestler.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
3, 2, 1,
Jerry
Randy
Seinfeld.
Savage. Who did you say? Jerry Seinfeld? Sake.
Oh, boy. All right, Randy Savage. All right, let's just type in Randy Savage. Just out there. Next time we'll each do one there.
Well, just name somebody else.
All right.
Ruins my bit here.
Dino Bravo.
Oh, my God. I'd rather have Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, but right. Do we have to do matches? Oh, look at this one. There's a couple good promos that come up. 1988 Montreal Forum Revenge,
promo
Dino Bravo.
Revenge.
Or we have Macho Man's King's Court promo. That's a good one, too, from Survivor Series.
Yeah, that is a pretty good one.
Let's do the
Are
one.
These guys did not face each other?
I don't know.
All right, well, we have a house show from the Maple Leaf Gardens.
Where's that?
October 85. Let's see what this card's looking like. We might could find something
okay.
Tasty here. Scott McGee versus Barrio. We got Hogan and Savage on that card. We could watch that. That's an early, you know, Savage pretty fresh in the promotion.
Yeah, we could do that.
All right. Do you see that show?
Yep, I'm on it now, and it's the main event. So let's skip ahead here and try to find it. I see the promo. If you go to 141.15, you get a Hogan coming in.
All right. So we'll start there.
Are we going to put the links? Oh, no, well, it's dirty content, right? So we can't. So I guess we'll just have to.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter, but we probably don't want it to get pulled, especially because this is from our friend. I'll just say the uploader of this one is somebody that uploads quite a lot of old school stuff on YouTube. Just in the past couple of days, he uploaded an Atlantic City Pier show from 1979. But all right, so 141.15. Let's press play now.
Okay, and it's the Maple Leaf Gardens house show, 10/13/85.
Right.
We're going to the main event, Hogan and Savage.
Oh, so this is really early Savage in WWF. We'll see if he's got rid of that Memphis stalling that is
always plagues him.
Yeah.
Many pundits will definitely talk about that. The Hogan's got the Wrestling All-Star song here from the wrestling album as well.
Oh, nice.
Of course, it would later be used by Jolter in WCF.
Well.
Yeah.
It's like a who wore it better, who had the better reach.
Oh, go get a Jolter. Well, Jolter did have the tight baseball pants and the half face paint, so it might be
him. Good. Now, who was the persona of Jolter?
That was my cousin Matt. He was Jolter.
Oh, okay.
That was the infamous screw job that we went into deeply on the podcast.
It was Jolter and Sexy Steve, or
Jolter and Flash. Jolter got screwed.
How could I forget?
Hogan's still in the white here. Savage and nice
he
purple.
Still has a lot of hair.
Yeah, he definitely did. For a time, and the woman beat him down. You know, you see what's on the playlist on the right over here. We get the Phil Donahue show with Vince on it from '92.
Oh, shit. Have you seen that or no?
I haven't watched the whole thing. I've definitely seen parts of it though. I know
have
it's a
you
shit
seen
show.
The part where the person talks to Bruno about his kid and. Bruno's just so pissed off, and he's like, you know something, Sonny, why don't you go back to school and maybe then you'll learn something. It's like, holy fuck, Bruno teeing off on this. And then Vince burying Murray Godson or whatever right there on the show. Like,
oh, yeah.
Saying,
he sucked
no,
at his
Murray,
job.
Yeah, you did a bad, terrible job. You were an awful announcer. It's like, Jesus.
I see a Saturday Night's Main Event on there as well, which I might claw my eyes out if I have to watch another one. So I'm good there.
We did get some recommendations. Of course, you know, I sent the shout out this morning, tweeted out some recommendations, and first one was the Saturday Night's Main Event from Parv, and I was like, yeah, probably not going to happen.
Definitely.
And he
not.
Did some like random DiBiase versus Blue Blazer or something. All right, so we're starting out Hogan showing his dominance. First off, Macho, very pissed.
And Savage has the classic on the pink tights and yellow boots. So that's the.
Yeah, I guess he came into the promotion pretty much. You know, I mean, that's someone that didn't really evolve his look very much until he became Macho King.
Right. No, definitely not.
So for. Straight into the promotion, he had what you would deem his iconic kind of attire, Whereas Hogan, he's still in the white here. He'd still wear the powder blue every once in a while.
When did Savage come in? Was it like July?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know exactly when. I haven't actually seen a lot of, the Brett Boston Garden match, and then these two I know squared off. I think it's December 30th at MSG, and I've watched that one. That was their first Garden run. But as far as from his debut up to the point where he was IC champ, I haven't watched a whole lot of that.
I mean, he couldn't have been doing too much other than feuding with Hogan. I mean, that's big for him. They brought him in and threw him right into the fire in a big feud with Hogan touring the country. They obviously saw a lot in him right out of the gate. I'm guessing he did some squash stuff, and then once he picked up Liz, it seemed like he almost got right into this feud.
Yeah, I would think he was a pretty highly sought out prospect once ICW went away. I'd be kind of interested, and I don't know the story. Maybe some of our better historians could enlighten us. But a running knee from Hogan. Wow,
yeah.
that was impressive there.
This is still Hogan's, he's still bringing the work at this point. And he always would, but it changes. Like, actually, one thing, watching those Saturday Night's Main Events, you see his style evolve. Like, right around 87-ish, when I think he realized with the workload he had and the tour he had going on and the matches he was doing, like, I think he realized he couldn't go that all out every night because he'd fall apart even quicker.
Right.
I think that's why he went to the kind of, couple punches and get his ass kicked for 10 minutes, come back and win the match. Versus when you watch a lot of these early stuff, the 85, 86, it's a lot more trading off of offense, and he hits, more than just the usual moves. And he'd break it out later here and there, like that match with Harley Race. He had another one in 89 with Honky, maybe, and where he was like all fired up and like working stiff. But for the most part, a lot of his like fast-paced offense kind of died off by 87 when he had to just slow things down to stay healthy.
Now, who are these guys with the white hats? Are those the ushers or what?
Yeah, they look like security or ushers, yeah.
The
cruise
wearing?
Ship captain for waiting for you to board.
Conductors here?
Welcome Canadian. Aboard the Polar Express.
Canadians here.
Could be Aaron George's dad,
I think I see a little Stephen Graham checking out Liz from the upper deck up there.
Well, now we know when we can go back in time and wipe him out.
Political hit out on him. But what I was going to say before that sidetrack was, I wonder if the NWA, though, courted Savage. It's so weird, but like you think about him in 1985.
Mm.
And, man, I mean, he went to the WWF. Obviously, he had tons of success there. But if he'd have went to the NWA, I think he'd have had a ton of success there. If he'd have went to Mid-South, who knows? But that would have been, I think, awesome, him versus DiBiase and him versus Duggan and some fired-up brawls. I mean, that was when Duggan or Dugan, as someone would say, was
the two
definitely
before.
At the peak, him versus Terry Gordy. That could have been awesome.
Did a lot of guys jump to NWA from Memphis at that time?
Not a ton. I mean, Memphis was a promotion where, certainly you had your younger guys. I mean, like Rick Rude started there and Bigelow and some of those guys, but because when Savage came in, it was with the angle, the interpromotional angle. So it really felt like, there's not really an equivalent of that, because it wasn't like Savage was a young guy kind of doing his program with Lawler. It was a real heated, great angle that they did. But, Savage was kind of an unknown just because ICW didn't have that much distribution. So he was back in the genesis of the dirt sheets in the early to mid-80s. I mean, he was someone that would have had a rep, kind of, oddly enough.
It might have been I mean, it might have been right place, right time for him to get the money deal to go, because, I mean, it's right in the time, 84 to 86, is when they were really going territory to territory and cleaning up as many guys as they could so they could fill up these house show tours and go national. You know, they would raid, you know, AWA, bringing those guys. They raided a little bit of Memphis and, you know, all the different areas, obviously Calgary, you know, so they went territory by territory. So it might have just been a case where if it was 2 years earlier or 2 years later, he might have been more likely to be bound for the NWA, because by 87-ish, 88, for the most part, Dirty F was done raiding. They would bring guys in, but they didn't, like, go and just, you know, pull a bunch of talent out of a territory and then buy the territory, you know what I mean? Like, by that point, they were just picking up whoever was on their way out, like, the AWA guys at the end of their rope, and whoever was lingering, like the Von Erichs, once World Class died, bringing Kerry in. But in this time period is really when they were, you know, proactively going after these guys to try and put these other areas out of business. So I think Savage might have just been part of that more than anything.
Sure. I think Hogan, Savage, Piper, and then probably later on DiBiase would have been the four kind of acquisitions that they made throughout the 80s that kind of signified that the most of your blue chip prospects coming up the ranks were eventually going to WWF.
Right.
I mean, that was like their destination. And Savage probably would have been the biggest one since Hogan jumped in 83.
I guess you could look too, and I don't know, maybe it's just ignorance of me on the Crockett part. I think once WWF began their national expansion, like, Crockett was a little behind, and I know they were outside of just the Carolinas and the South, but I think when you're looking at it, maybe in his mind, is like, is Crockett that much bigger than Memphis at that time in his mind? You know, if you really want to go big time and get on national TV and make the money, at that point, WWF was the place to go. Crockett hadn't really fully kind of gotten there by 85, you know?
Yeah, I would say that would have been probably true by 87, but I think in 85 there was still, I mean, they didn't have the reach WWF was, but that would have been a time when the tide could have maybe changed and they could have grown if they would have possibly added someone like Savage.
Right.
Because this, I mean, what we're watching right now is right when the Horsemen are gearing up. 86 is, I think, the most successful financial year of Crockett. I know the Great American Bash Tour was hugely successful. And then you start really from there, start to see the decline with the UWF deal and all that in 87 and 88, the bleak years. So this is right at the turning point of that. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to think about it. Because by this time, it was still, WWF was still kind of, I mean, of course, they went national, but they were still in New York, Spectrum, Cap Center, Maple Leaf Gardens, Boston Garden. That was their loop for the most part.
Would you have brought Savage in as a face then to feud with the Horsemen?
Yeah, I think he would have been great as a face to feud with the Horsemen, because he was so good to slot up and down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, him versus Flair at Starrcade 85, I mean, that was always, Dusty thought that was always going to be his spot. But you know, it was time to do something else. So if he could have done that for Starrcade 85, I think that would have just been gangbusters. I mean, if you think about that, you could have had Savage, Flair, and then that Magnum Tully match as mm-hmm. your top two on that show. And who know? I mean, and of course, at this time, nobody had any idea what would happen with Magnum. So slotting Savage and Magnum as your two faces to go against the Horsemen feels like you really have your two future stars to counteract the star power of the Horsemen. And then later on, you can always do something else where, you know, Flair. I mean, I think at that point then, I mean, of course, the great fantasy booking. Well, Savage just did his big elbow, really hit it.
He really laid it in. And also Hogan, too, earlier. That running elbow he does is really good. I mean, he stopped doing that, too, after a while, but that was one of his signature moves at this time.
Not really a Hulk up, either, out of the elbow. Nah. Savage has come back up.
The pacing's been really good here, too. Like, it's been best-paced match. And I can hear, I don't have the commentary too loud, but Jesse already super pro Savage here.
I wonder who was doing this one.
It's Jesse and Gorilla.
Oh, interesting.
Hogan gets the win with Savage went for another elbow.
That was kind of a weird finish there. Oh, trash in the ring.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was a really good match. It was.
Yeah, great spirited sprint. Savage kind of, I think he looks pretty strong in defeat there. Attacks Hogan after the match to get his heat bag slam. Great spot where he flies off the top rope, hitting Hogan in the back on the floor with the belt.
Yeah, you could tell they were definitely setting up for an extended run around the circuit here. And, I mean, well-earned. Savage had a lot of heat behind him. And
fell on. I really don't know whether I like Savage better as a heel or a face. He is really good.
Yeah, he's so just fast at this point, just flying around the ring. I mean, he was slowing up a bit for Hogan, but he was pushing Hogan to move with him. You know, he was his grace and athleticism was like unbelievable.
I know you're perpetually behind, but in about 6 months, when you get to the Greatest Wrestler Ever podcast on Childs and Charles's podcast, they talk about how Savage would like leap up to the top rope, and how it would seem like he would kind of cross and run the ropes that little extra faster than everybody else.
Oh, for sure.
Kind of in the way he would move his body. So I thought it was just really interesting discussion and totally true. I mean, it's kind of like, they liken it to, it's almost like an illusion. I mean, he's probably not going that much faster, but just the way he is contorting his body, it really feels like he is just kind of an out-of-control freight train coming in.
Yeah, I mean, he always looks during this time period a step faster. And there's not many people, maybe Steamboat is like one of the only guys he feuds with that can hang with him for like grace and speed in the ring. I mean, him and Tito have great matches, but Tito wasn't, at his level as far as athleticism, as far as speed and moving around the ring. And just like a cat a lot of times in the ring, And it almost is like a little bit slower version of like Ray when he'd be in there at like this warp speed against bigger guys. That's what it felt like, where he's just on this other level of speed, flying around the ring. So.
All right. So that was our first one. That was a good bit of fun.
Yeah, there you go. Dino Bravo, who would have thought? Bring us to this.
Randy Savage and Dino Bravo putting that in. All right, so I'm going back to the homepage.
All right.
And in the past week, you'll never guess what I've become interested in. Sumo.
Sumo, huh?
Yes.
Like old sumo or current day sumo?
Current day sumo, baby.
Jeez.
The May Boss Show is fast approaching. I'm going to be watching live. Be on the lookout. Place to Be Nation, live sumo report.
I was going to say, we should do a reaction show.
Meet me and Dave Musgrave.
Well, you got to have Dylan there if it's a reaction show, even if you didn't watch it.
All right, so
Jimmy
are you Rave ready?
Is the I'm best on... sumo wrestler out there today.
Well, Akibana. Man. You never, I mean, like, okay, the quick sidetrack, but there's only been 71, I think, Yokozuna in history. And Akibono was one for, like, 9 years. And when he came in to face the Big Show, I mean, you just had no, like, gravity of that situation whatsoever.
No, he was like a fat guy with the floppy
freaking
fupa.
Just like a fat ass coming out there to tumble around.
Yeah.
Very sad.
My Yokozuna.
All right, so are we ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Yokozuna.
Berserker. Yokozuna and Berserker, yeah.
Oh, we're heading to 93, I think. Let's see. oh, my God. Oh, Yokozuna and Mr. Fuji on Conan O'Brien. November...
Conan O'Brien. We may have to watch that.
We got Savage and Yoko for the March WrestleMania. Oh, Typhoon and Yoko from Superstars.
Oh,
Brett Berserker. For 6 minute match from 11.
Yeah, there we go.
You
want to
watch
6
that?
Minutes. Yeah.
Actually, they got the TV debut of the Berserker down here too, as the Viking. You want to watch that versus in a squash, David Isley?
don't know. I'm kind of interested to see Brett versus the Berserker.
Okay.
A lot of talk, you know, greatest wrestler ever. There's been a lot of talk about Brett. Let's see what he can do in 6 minutes versus the Berserker here.
All right, so the match is Bret Hart versus the Berserker from November 9th, 1992. So if you want to plug that in.
You know, WWF champion Bret Hart.
Yes, recent. Had just won it, yeah. And right around the time, I just watched the Saturday Night's Main Event. And we'll be coming up soon on the refresh, him and Papa Shango for around this time as well. So he was running through all the big monsters as he got underway. I mean, his whole thing. Well, we can start and then we'll talk about it. You ready?
Well, I've got an advertisement from Charmin right now.
Okay, well, I'm at zero, so you let me know when we want to hit play.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, 3, 2. All right, so, and I'm already annoyed because the audio is in one ear of my headphones for this match.
it's flying out the pipe, you know, that you heard from.
The
Such a distinctive, too. There's that WWF entrance way. This is bringing me back. This is my childhood right
92
here.
And 93. You get the neon entrance, the wave of noise on the syndicated shows. Brett's whole thing at this time was really focused around him being a fighting champion. Like, that was a whole mantra. That's what he was, you know, booked as. That's what he ran as in this initial run. And they really played it up. Like, he was on TV a lot, way more than previous champions, you know, whether it was Hogan or Flair or anyone else. He was constantly on TV. Remember he had the match with Virgil at one point? You know, all these different guys he would take on as challengers. And it was cool. It was a good way to book him and get him over because, you know what, he wasn't a big-name star until this point. He had been well-regarded but not a top draw just yet. So having him out there constantly to show him off, you know what, we actually have a champion that can wrestle his ass off and – with all different, you know, kinds of matches, let's just roll him out there every week and let him show off what he can do.
Joe Koff right there in the front row. I got the red jacket. Man. All right. So here we go. We saw that match with Brett versus Fox 2, one of the early Raws we watched.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough for me with Brett because it's not like I dislike him, but I just feel like as I've integrated myself further into this IWC wormhole, I've just soured a bit. I don't know because he's still ranked high for me. I mean, I ranked him 39th on my greatest wrestler ever, but. And there's just something, and I get the positives of him. The working champion, smart wrestler, really good finishes.
The little things, too. He always did the little things real well. Like, real close attention to detail in a lot of his matches.
Right. I mean, he's somebody that definitely took it serious. He didn't, he didn't go into a match half hazardly, kind of.
He didn't use his penis to do hip tosses.
even, I think, to the detriment sometimes, because, I mean, I definitely think there were some times where he did think about a match and say, you know what, we can kind of take it a little easy tonight.
Right.
I mean, I've certainly seen evidence of that, and it's sort of just how you view that. Is that somebody smart, preserving himself and investing for the big match, or is it a laziness that's kind of in the eye of the viewer at that point. Flung the Berserker out by his hair.
That was an awesome spot. And the one thing about Berserker that I always loved about him, why I just enjoyed his match so much, is that for a big guy, he's got these long legs, and he just was great at his bumping, and like he'd do these insane bumps that make no sense, but they look so cool, like where he'd get punched into a split, you know, like all these things. But even just something as simple as him getting flipped over the top rope like that, because he's so long and lanky, but he has such great control of his body, like it just looks really cool. You know what I mean? Like and he always lands on his feet, and I don't know, he just had really good balance for a big guy, and because he's got these huge legs, it like is more noticeable, you know?
Yeah, he takes bumps a lot like Bruiser Brody. Similar build, not just because of the furry boots, but kind of a similar build there between Nord and Brody. So when was he done? 93?
Yeah, he leaves in like early-ish 93. He debuted in early 91. is the Viking, like I said before, and then became the Berserker. Yeah, he hangs around until like early 90s.
Oh, he's about to bust out a pile driver, looks like, here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be good, and then he buckled, didn't he?
Yeah, he held him up there like he was about to really spike him, and then he just sort of hobbled back. So,
I do want to watch. I'm telling you right now, we're going off the sidebar for our next match for Goldberg
please
versus
not.
John Nord.
Oh, okay. I think so. Please not Bret Hart versus Blake.
No, I'm all set there.
Oh, my.
No, we'll do Goldberg and John Nord. I want to see that. I want to see how Nord progresses from 92 to 98 or whatever.
Yeah, good Goldberg. I mean, Marty Jannetty versus Repo Man. There's a pretty good gold mine on this sidebar. It looks like these two had a pretty good feud. I mean, I'm looking for an IC. There's an IC title match just from the shot on the sidebar. It looks like it was an MSG. Now, you know, I mean, Brett, after the pile driver, Brett's now running through his stuff, making pretty quick work here. It is what it is, 6-minute TV match, not...
Well, it's a showcase, it's from primetime, so it's a showcase, end of the night, title match, get Brett on the show. You know, they did this a lot on primetime towards the end there.
Nothing terrible, nothing great. You get to see Hart.
Not a bad match. Nothing great. Not too long. Not too decent match. Decent length. Pretty good. Great match.
We could do the some other reviewers and say great match and then give it 3 stars, or say the show was okay and have like 3-4-star matches on a random New Japan show. Like, Jesus Christ.
I'd go probably two stars in this. It was
like WrestleMania 10 didn't even have 3-4-star matches. Think about how hype that show's been over the years.
I'd say two.
Right, so
maybe
that's,
one
that's
and three quarters
that.
Or two. Good, you know, good bumping from Berserker. I like to
the we did get a quick snippet of the round table there.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's like
this...
quite the motley crew. I saw Hillbilly Jim, The Brain.
All right. So this is a treat. This is John Nord versus Goldberg. Right. Worldwide, July 4th, 98.
Oh, nice.
It's Goldberg versus John Nord if you type it in. And I get this set has already got me excited just looking at it on the pause here at the.
How are you not getting these commercials?
I don't know. I may have a special deal with YouTube. And wait till you see the, this is, looks like from the Goldberg home video, maybe. It says Goldberg Nuff Said in the bottom. So I'm guessing that was his home video.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, you ready? 3, 2. All right, we got Tony.
Okay.
Tony on the call. Oh, God, what a different look, huh?
Now, what does this shirt say? If you don't like me, what?
There's something wrong with you.
Oh. If you don't like me, see back.
And then it says, is that something wrong with you?
So Tony on the call here.
Tony Larry, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Larry did do the world. I mean, you remember at the end when WCW Pro had, like, those stained glass windows and they
yes.
tried to give that kind of rave look? What was that? It was terrible.
I reviewed one of those for the freaking message board a few years ago. I think it was at the last ever... It was either the last ever pro. It was like whatever the last episode of WCW to air before the Nitro. It was either Worldwide or Pro, and it had Zabisco and Hudson in that rave little friggin' studio. And it was, I don't know. It was a really cool episode. It was like,
I mean,
that,
I guess that was Universal, but Jesus.
Look at that Goldberg logo. Friggin'
nice.
It's like, ugh, awful.
Now, when's this from 98?
Yeah, July 4th,
98. So this aired 2 days before he wins the world title.
Yeah, this is a final warm-up match for Hogan right here against John Nord.
So, I mean, he is, but we are in peak Goldberg.
Right.
That's still, I really have to think about whether him winning the title, Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30, or just the sheer shock and madness of the streak ending. It's the best live moment I've ever seen.
Or Goldberg versus John Nord.
Well, probably. I may have actually seen this match. I don't know. I did attend a house show.
Nord has like the ultimate I'm a wrestler thing going on right now. He's got the sunglasses for no reason,
yeah.
The stupid t-shirt. Like, he's just like guy joining wrestling. But he's still got the
just
furry
straight
boots.
Out of the
and look, the same
bump
over the
John
top.
Nord.
There it is. Clothesline to the floor. That's just one of his signature spots, I guess. I like the all-white, though. It's a nice look on Nord.
I mean, he could not get any offense in on this match. There's no way.
he didn't have a bad look. I'm surprised Vince didn't bring him back in this pair. You know what I mean? Like, you, they were desperate for talent in 97. Like, he's got a, he's still a big guy. He's in shape. Like, you know, he could work well enough. I'm surprised he didn't
you
bring
know
him
what
back.
I think they should have done? Shave his head, put him in the DOA.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I mean, he had the look and the skill. I mean, he wasn't awful. He was passable.
Good enough as the Ayers brothers, I guess.
And chains.
God.
Big back body job.
You should watch the Smoky Mountain Wrestling Primetime Brian Lee, because it's actually, he is really not that bad, and it's just, he was never...
No, he was mailing
that good.
Like, chains was a paycheck job for him. That was,
anything. I mean, anything after under Faker, and he was just awful. I don't know what. It's almost like that shook his confidence for good.
Well, that he was just coasting off that, having that job, you know?
I guess. It's just so weird. I mean, because in 93, when Smoky Mountain, I mean, he feels like, so we're all ready to the spear.
Yeah, this is a quick. I mean, Nord got a couple shots in, and that was about
nothing,
it.
Nothing here.
I do see Kevin Nash and Wrath down there as well.
We're going back to the randomization because I got some guy that I want to throw out his name and just see what pops up. So again, two Nord showcases where he's getting jobbed out here.
Just squash. This one's a little more believable, at least.
A lot. 6 years, his look has changed a lot, but...
Oh, my God. Look at this match at the bottom, though, of this playlist. John Nord and Barry Darso versus Disorderly Conduct from Saturday night, January 98.
Negative.
Al Green and Goldberg. Some good stuff down there. UConn, John Nord against Tony the Annihilator.
That is not happening.
All right. Here we go.
All right. I'm back to the homepage here.
All right.
Maybe. What's happening? It's wanting me to watch the replay. Okay, now we're back. All right, are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Atom Bomb.
Gold Dust. Who did you say?
Atom Bomb.
Oh, God. Come on. I knew this was a terrible idea with you.
Yeah, we haven't really watched anything for the guys we've
right
said.
Now.
We're face-to-face, Razor Ramon and Atom Bomb, December 12th, 93. There you go. Atom Bomb's a tough one. Maybe we'll just do, let's see, can we do Wrath? Because Atom Bomb's bringing up, like, actual Atom Bomb stuff.
Well, we do have Atom Bomb versus Tom Pritchard.
Where's that?
I put in Goldust and Atom Bomb and got that.
Hang on, I did Atom Bomb first, so that might be why I'm getting different stuff. Hang on, let me do it.
Throws the algorithm all off. I'm surprised we haven't got one where they've actually faced each other. Oh. You do Goldust and Atom Bomb, you get Fetty Wrap, Jimmy Choo.
I don't see this Tom Pritchard match. If you want to send me the link, I don't know why it's not coming up.
Oh, this was a fail. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's two new guys. We broke the system.
All right.
Ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1.
Dean Malenko.
I was going to say Psychosis. I couldn't get it out. I froze.
Oh, there you go. I'm going to get something good out of this one.
Well, that should be good.
We got a Dean Malenko, Evan Courageous match, 317. There's some video game. Some video game. There's an hour of, is it just Psychosis wrestling matches? What the hell? And WCW NWO Revenge, Psychosis Cruiserweight, hard level, an hour and 1 minute.
Guess it's a Jordan Duncan. Leveling up to the top here.
It's a dunking off.
Man, this is really... I'm surprised there's not more tasty stuff here. Here we go. A Cruiserweight title, Rey Mysterio versus Dean Malenko from my 10th birthday.
August
10th, 96. See that? August 10th, 1996.
Yeah, so is that a Saturday night, it looks like?
It looks like it.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
You know, this was when they had the big match at the Great American Bash and then Halloween Havoc. So this will give them, we'll see what they can do on a TV match here. All right, you ready?
I am ready, sir. Kind
of
oh,
soon. This is, oh, you'll love the setting. Do you see it?
Oh, yeah. Wildcat Willie.
Here we go. All right, let's hit play now. So we are in the aforementioned stained glass window.
Oh,
WCW
it's pro.
Pro.
There we go. I hear Lee Marshall.
Sage. This is great stuff. Wildcat Willie being WCW as his initials was something I really didn't figure out till.
I think I didn't figure out till you just said it right now. Not gonna lie.
That was something that took way too long. Oh my God! Look at this guy in the crowd.
Jesus.
Horse face.
It looks like Justin Credible for a minute with hair. What an amazing depth, though, of WCW's roster to run this match out on fucking Pro. Dean Malenko, yeah. Rey Mysterio, Cruiserweight title match on Pro in 96. Yeah. I mean, so many gems probably just lost to the archive of syndication in WCW. I know a lot have been unearthed in years later, but just at the time, I mean, if you weren't watching all the stuff, just all the stuff you were missing, you know?
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, even in the early 90s, you have stuff like that, you know, I mean, you'd get like that Bobby Eaton versus Ric Flair match from early January 7th, 1990, which was on Pro. I mean, that's a legit 4-star match, 17 minutes that's just hanging out on a WCW Pro show.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a difference,
crazy.
Too, from...
I mean, you didn't see that in syndication on WWF. I mean, every once in a while, you'd get, like, the Action Zone tag. And the Superstars Brett Backlund match, but
right, very rare. A lot of it was usually squash matches, and if the feature match would be something like a Razor Ramon and an Atom Bomb, you know, like stuff like that. Whereas WCW seems to just always load up their B shows and C shows with legit stars and matches. I mean, there were times if you rewatch like some of the Nitros on the network in '96, like they're plugging the NWO being on Saturday night, you know, like doing stuff there, and. Till the end. I mean, really not until the last couple of years where they really stopped giving a shit about Saturday Night because Thunder came along. But Malenko's offense is awesome as always, especially at this point, 96.
Yeah, I would say this is peak Malenko probably right here. And Ray might be my favorite opponent in ring for Malenko. I mean, I think the storyline stuff with Jericho, of course, is really memorable, but... It felt like they just gelled together here because Dean could be more of a bully. This was kind of when he was becoming the quote-unquote kind of ace heel of the Cruiserweight division.
It was such a good fit, him in WCW at this time, because of stuff like this, whereas in WWF, if he went there, he's not getting this kind of spotlight where even though he's not a world champion or whatever, he's dominating the Cruiserweight division, but he's getting out there in all these different matches against this variety of opponents. So it was like a perfect fit for a guy like Malenko in the mid-90s if he's going to be in a North American promotion.
Yeah. I mean, I'd see him in WWF around this time faring like Furnace and LaFon did.
Right.
I mean, I can't foresee him doing very well at all.
Because I'm dusty on commentary this time around.
Who? Dusty?
Yeah. Dusty Lee Marshall, it sounds like.
Oh, nice.
Jonas on the Pro, baby. Pro was Sunday morning? Was it Sunday morning at this point?
Sunday morning is when, I mean, I think it may have been syndicated in different spots, but I know Sunday morning for me was when it would come on because it was either, I think it was at 10 o'clock because I'd have to go to Sunday school. So there was a certain point in time where I would take Pro every Sunday morning and watch it when I got home from church.
Yeah, I want to say it was like 9 or something here. I mean, yeah, I remember Power Hour.
It may have been 9 because, I mean, Sunday school started at 10. I know I couldn't watch the whole show, so I had to tape it, and I was always pissed. I was like, I'll go to church. I just don't want to go to Sunday school. But.
Do you remember when was Power Hour? That was like at 7, wasn't it, in the morning, like on Saturdays or something crazy?
Oh, God. I don't know when Power Hour came on, but I know it came on right after Bonanza.
It was really early. It was either 7 or 8 in the morning on Saturday.
Because my dad would always blast the Bonanza theme. He would hum it along, and then Power Hour would come on, and he'd disappear.
Yeah, I liked Power Hour. And then I guess Worldwide was on. They had a lot of freaking shows on the weekend, huh? Yeah, Worldwide, Pro.
They had Pro. They had Worldwide. They had Power Hour.
Saturday night and Main Event on Sundays.
Right. Just tons. I don't think you realize how early you wake up when you were a kid. Like, now that I have a son that wakes right. up regularly on Saturday morning at, like, 6:45. It's like, man, I was a pretty big dick waking up at 7 a.m. on Saturday when I was a six-year-old.
Right. Well, as you get a little bit older, I mean, by the time I was watching some of this stuff, you know, I was, like, 12, 13, and it was actually my favorite time of the week, I think. Because they had everyone else would be sleeping. I'd come down by myself at, like, 7, and either wrestle my wrestling buddy, watch whatever was on, throw a tape on. Like, that was, like, my safe haven time by myself for a couple hours.
Your safe zone.
Safe zone on Saturday morning, just watch a wrestling by myself. And then my sister would come and raise havoc, and then my mom would be out there cooking. So it was
shocking you're married with two kids after telling a story like that.
I know, right?
Hitting puberty and all you're thinking about is coming down to play with your wrestling buddy.
What do you want? It was a different world, you know. I didn't have
all this. Kind of true. I mean, I know. I mean, the thing that really, I guess for me, the what if was I really wish I could have grown up in the area I did about 15 to 20 years earlier. Because looking at the Omni shows in the early to mid 80s, and then you had the 8-hour block of wrestling, the Joe Pedicino super block. I mean, that would just been incredible. I can very vaguely remember the tail end of that block. I know it used to be WCW Saturday Night would kind of kick things off, and then they would do Glow, and I vaguely remember that. But then I'd have to go to bed.
And you'd be almost Scott's age.
Yeah. Well. I guess.
15 years earlier. The Saturday night for me was definitely like appointment viewing. Even when I was older, 17, 18, I'd be going out. Like, I remember just trying to plan to go out after Saturday night, or trying to watch it up until like my friend would come get me or whatever. That was like the one show every week I'd watch. When I was younger, before I'd be going out, like 14, 15, I'd watch it and then call my buddy Jim would watch it, and then we'd call and like break it down for like an hour after. So that was like my... You know, good memories there, too, of Saturday night always being appointment viewing for me.
So, I mean, what do you think? Why do you think that's happened? Do you think, like, they've just made everything so sterile? Or, because, you know, I mean, like, I think both of us can say right now Raw is not appointment television.
No.
SmackDown, most of the time, is not even a fault in my mind. With Morrow coming on board, I've watched it more, but in the past, I mean, like 2015 SmackDown, I probably could not name you one match
right.
that sticks out the whole year in 52 weeks of television. So what happened there? I mean, booking has not been great, but it's not like in 1995 the booking was great either. Was it just because I was 9 years old? Or?
Yeah, I think there's three factors. One, we were kids, and it was still real to us, damn it. It's like, even though you knew it was fake, I mean, it was. It meant more when you were a kid, because especially, and I'm really not trying to pull the when I was a kid, but the, you know, it was just less shit to do. I mean, it's just a fact, you know, like the internet was just kind of starting to come out, but you couldn't just like sit on there for hours on end. You know what I mean? Like, I had limited minutes, you know, so you couldn't be on there that long. And there was less options. I didn't have Netflix or, you know, a million DVDs. It wasn't, you know, you could go to the video store, but that's it. You pick that and that's what you got for 3 days. So it's like, you had your own personal collection to watch. You had whatever was on the 57 or 58 channels you had. And that's it. So if you were a wrestling fan, you know, you were craving anything you got, because that was it. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. That's what you're going to watch now. You don't have this endless bounty of tapes if you're 14. I mean, I think at age 14, I had a decent collection, but, you know, how many times are you going to watch Survivor Series 90? You know, it's like,
right.
You're going to watch it so many times. So it's all new content that you want to see, you're dying to see. So that's part of it. I think part of it, too, is just more happened and there was more competition and you wanted to see what each of these you know, promotions were going to do, because they were competing with each other. So a lot was going on. Whereas now, I mean, you can miss Raw for a month and a half and pick it up and you're not missing much. And you're just not. I don't know what it is or when the dynamic changed, but sometime in the mid 2000s, WWE just went to this place where, like you said, it just all blends together. You know, and if I was 11 now, maybe it wouldn't, you know, maybe it would mean more to me week to week. But I think I've just seen so much friggin' wrestling that, you know, these great matches are great. But if it's not captivating, or I just got other stuff to do. Like right now, I'm sitting here recording with you, watching wrestling on YouTube, watching the Yankees and Rangers and watching the Hornets and Miami Heat. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
And checking my phone.
You could definitely multitask.
You know, whereas in 1996, if I'm watching this match, I'm watching this match on my little TV in my parents' room,
right,
laying on the floor or laying on my bed in my room, and like, legit, that's all I'm doing. Like, maybe jotting down some notes to talk to my friend about after the show. Like, that's, I'm not doing much else. Maybe playing with my wrestling figures while I'm watching. You know what I mean? Like, there's not much else going on that I can be multitasking with. So it was just different. I think that's such a big part of it.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, there is a sense that, even if I don't watch Raw, if there's something that is so must watch, I mean, you can catch it later. Like,
right.
If I hear like that four-way for Mania, or the Raw after Mania, you know, got back from my cruise, heard really good things about that four-way, you know, just threw it on right on the DVR. But
yeah, that's such a big part of it too. You're right. I mean, I just know, like you said, I mean, I have Raw on when we're recording every Monday. And if I see something that catches my eye, I know I can catch it on Hulu or on YouTube or on my DVD. You know, there's so many other options. Whereas this, it's like, I want to see that Malenko-Mysterio match. Unless I set the VCR because I'm going out, like, I got to sit there and watch it. You know, it's not going to be anywhere else waiting for me. I need to plan.
Yeah, I mean, if you missed this, you were paying $20 for a tape. And that's if you were
right.
Niche enough to know the tape listers at this point in time. Right. I mean, it was not. It's crazy to think about that. Like when I first started watching Japanese wrestling in 2001. I mean, getting a VHS tape, and I would always splurge. You know, I would get it extended play, which would decrease the quality to sometimes nearly unwatchable. But you know, damn it, I could cram three shows on there, and if I was going to pay $20, I wanted as much, you know, bang for my buck as I could. And, well, Ray just picked up the win here.
Yeah, it was a really good match. I mean, obviously, like we said, they have great chemistry anyway, but a really hot finish the last few minutes there. And it's amazing, these guys, the amount of times they fought during this tight stretch in 96, and every match, you know, they'd work some of the same stuff in, but every match felt different in its own way with the pacing the way they split.
This was like one of their fall out of bed 3-star matches.
Right. And I mean, like, you know, 12 and a half
minutes.
Oh,
yeah, that's a compliment. I mean,
that's something.
I mean, I think if this was on Raw now, that like that same exact match would get pretty good, you know, high praise.
It looked like it was a main event, too, because they went to the credits after. So,
right.
Big spot for them on the pro.
So since I'm on the big pay phone, how are we doing on time? We got time for one or two more?
Yeah, we're at 52 minutes here. We can do a couple more.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Do we want to get a little more selective?
Yeah, I'm up for whatever. Whatever you're thinking.
I'll tell you who I'm thinking about I want to watch.
Okay.
Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff.
Okay.
Because there was a Mystery Titans match that they had that was from, I think, the Spectrum, maybe. But it was really good. Here's the first one from, it says 1985.
Yes.
From actually WWE.
Yep. That's the one you want to watch?
Yeah, let's try it. Because it was, the one I watched with Mystery Titans was actually a really spirited, great match. This is from MSG 713, 1985.
Well, even the Saturday Night's Main Event match was really good. It was quick, but they beat the crap. It was like really, like you said, a lot of spirit and heat behind it.
Piper's somebody I've turned the corner on in ring, actually.
There's actually a cool match there on the right-hand side. Shawn Michaels and Roddy Piper, it looks like, from 92. Piper's IC champ.
Yeah, we can transition to that.
Okay.
Do a little twofer.
All right, start this, and then I want you to tell me about this Piper Renaissance. So let's count this in. Roddy Piper versus Paul Orndorff, 1985. It's actually from the WWE's YouTube channel. So,
all right,
3, 2.
All
Yes, we are in the garden, gorilla.
And big Piper. I mean, Piper in the garden is just... So I mean, I think I was a little too young, of course, to really get Piper as a kid. I mean, he was kind of the mentor in the Virgil feud. That's sort of what I remember as a kid, him, you know, making the bologna sandwiches, that promo from WrestleMania 8. So that was that. And then, but it's been kind of a strange journey I've been on with Piper, because when The Greatest Wrestler Ever started up and he was nominated, he was one of the first few guys nominated, like in that first day or so that nominations were open. And, you know, most of your other guys were your usual suspects, Bret Hart, you know, Stan Hansen, Masawa, you know, the big gun, Savage.
Right.
So when Piper came out there as like maybe the 25th thread created, he was kind of that first person, because on the other threads I was like, yep, I'm voting for him, yep, I'm voting for him. When Piper's name showed up, I was kind of like, I don't see it at all. But, and the other thing is, you know, I've been going through the 90s, and Piper in WCW, I think, is pretty much fucking awful.
Right.
He is just, like, from Alcatraz promo on, he is just in the way. It's like, just get out of the way. I mean, I don't think Flair in that era is even near as embarrassing. You know, Flair in a mental hospital is not as bad as some of the worst Piper I've seen.
I like to start. I mean, him and Hogan at Starrcade is
training.
Him and Hogan at Starrcade is pretty good.
Yeah, that's why I would say, like, once he did the Alcatraz promo heading into Super Brawl versus Hogan, from there on, it's over.
Well, the only other one match I really like of his is the six-man with was it Kevin Green? Was it?
Oh,
six?
Yeah, from Flamboree. Now, that is a good match. That is a really good match.
It was him, Flair, and Kevin Green against the Outsiders and six, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that had the great back-to-back promos with the Nash, the potholes, leaving the potholes in the road. You know, we paved the way, and then Nash responds.
Right.
Like, that was a good month of build. And that had no Hogan on that show either. So that was, like, a clean month of build without Hogan building to that as the main event of Slamboree, which was a great show and a great match.
Yeah. But then, so the 90s, late 90s, I've just been like, ugh, you know, get off my screen for the most part. But then you go back and you watch, like, that the cage match he had with Rude and some of the stuff from the early 90s, and it's pretty good to really good. And then I've been watching, like I said, through Mystery Titans and just sort of random late-night YouTube searching. I've watched some of his stuff, like, you know, the War to Settle the Score. I haven't seen that match in a while, so I watched that fairly recently. And Piper really had just a great, spirited, I'd call it kind of like a popcorn exciting match.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be layered and psychology and great moves, but it's going to have a lot of energy, just a ton of heat because he's in it. And I mean, you're even seeing this now in what we saw so far with this match. I mean, you know, basic stuff where Orndorff's going after his arm, but you have, I mean, Piper just, he would shake his head, he would kick, he would jaw at the crowd and just kind of get that reaction that really feels like it resonates. You know, 30 years later still. And then the Portland stuff is kind of the tip of that, where I've watched the Portland matches versus Buddy Rose, and them matches, I think, those matches are legitimately great. So a pretty good renaissance for Piper. I didn't vote on him, but I really strongly considered him.
Yeah, you know, doing the network adventure, even where he's popped up here and there, and rewatching more of this older stuff with, you know, doing the Vintage Bowl refresh series again, kind of watching his earlier stuff, the Saturday's main events. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, even when he has the short, quick matches, there's so much heat. And I've talked about it before. I won't go into it, you know, deep here, but the Piper tape, the Coliseum video that chronicles the whole Snuka, you know, Tonga Kid, all that stuff. Yeah, that was awesome right there. Broke out of the bags. I just poked him in the eyes.
Little poke to the eye.
But the that feud, that whole chronicling of that feud on that Coliseum video was like unbelievable. Like the heat in all those matches was just through the roof in 84. Like you said, we just saw the coconut angle on one of the TNTs we watched.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping we get some of that stuff on one of those TNTs where either him and Snuka or him and, Tonga Kid or one of those matches on there.
Well, this is, I mean, yeah, so the last, that was what, episode 4 or 3? 3 was the coconut angle. And then in episode 4 of TNT, we have the whole David Wolfe, Cyndi Lauper saga, that he's a key cog in that. And then it looks like in episode 5, we're going to see Piper again versus Hogan. I haven't watched that one yet, but it looks like it's him and Hogan kind of dishing it out a little bit. I mean, this guy was everywhere in these hotly, intertwined feuds at the time. And just, what a icon kind of the time. Incredible. And I mean, this match, I got to tell you, these two guys together, but now between seeing the previous match and seeing this one, this is one of my unsung in-ring feuds in WWF in the 80s, I don't know. But this is two matches now between these guys that I've just greatly enjoyed.
Well, and there's such a good background to it, too, because of what happened at 1. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much, there's a reasoning for the feud. And,
right.
You know? And I'm not the biggest fan of Orndorff's face stuff at this time. Like, he's so much better as a heel, but this is the one feud.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
He's just such a natural douche.
Like, you think it was a mistake.
Yeah, well, we've seen it so much already, even on TNT, just how good he was at his being an asshole. And I thought his offense spoke to it more. He's just this natural look. You know, he's almost like Tully. Just a natural-looking guy, a good-looking guy, all jacked up, just a prick. You know what I mean? Like, his offense, to me, was more suited to be the kind where he beats out the guy and talks shit to him. I don't know. He's tougher to get into underneath. I mean, it works because they had to set up him and Hogan. And it almost worked better that you can't fully buy into his face because you kind of were like, shit. You know, when he turned on Hogan, like, that dick did it. We didn't know if he would. You know, we thought he had reformed and he did it anyway. And, yeah, I don't know. To me, he was always a quintessential heel. Like, I just never really bought his face stuff as much. But this one feud with Piper is kind of the one time where, to me, it works because it almost doesn't feel like a face and a heel. It just feels like two guys. It feels like two, bank robbers that turned on each other and now are out to get
right.
each other. You know, it's like just two outlaws that are now going at it that had tried to team up and it failed because of their egos. So it feels more like that to me than like Orndorff actually being the face in the feud. You know, later on, he feels more of like a pure face, and I don't think it works as well.
Which this may have Will rolling over in his grave, but Lawler and Dundee kind of has that same vibe as a feud, really, too.
Right.
Where that's just a brawl, these two guys will do whatever it takes to win. There is a clear heel face structure, but you're not getting a lot of kind of glad handing, high impact, all your typical blowjobish baby face type spots. It's
right.
more of a rough, muddled battle.
Well, it's almost like the early Austin stuff when he first was starting to turn in like 97, 98, where he's not really changing his style or what he's doing. He's just being cheered for it. Like, it almost felt that way for Orndorff.
It'd have been good if he'd have had someone to kind of counteract that.
Right.
That wouldn't have...
Well, they tried it with Undertaker, but it was...
Yeah.
Austin was already solidified as a face by that point. You know what I mean?
I guess SummerSlam 98 is probably the closest they ever
right.
got to trying that.
That's my thought. Where they were both faces instead of where Piper and Orndorff were kind of heels going at it,
right.
you know? But, yeah, I think that's probably the closest they got was where they did the whole thing with Taker and him.
I don't really know who would have been good in that role then. Like, I can't think of...
Flair, if you jumped.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I mean, yeah, Flair can brawl, but it's almost like I'm thinking of, like, a Barry Windham circa 1988, like
right.
that type of...
What if they did Foley without aligning him with Vince, you know?
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say, too. I mean, you have the Foley stuff, but with him being aligned to Vince, there was just no escaping. I mean, yeah, Foley could match the physicality to make those car crash-style matches work, but...
How about a Vader?
Yeah, that's actually... Because if you could have... Yeah, they really they should have done that. I almost think, or even Shamrock could have worked that as well. kind of a missed opportunity. I mean, I, you know, hindsight being 2020, I'd take that over the Kane stuff. So here we got Cowboy Bob.
This crowd is going
here.
Crazy, by the way, just out of their minds right now.
Yeah, Bob's still wearing the cast.
Yeah, and that's it. We get the DQ and the interference. I mean, that was a great brawl. The crowd was going insane at the end.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get a double count out when they both tumbled over the top.
Right. Right before this, they tumbled both out kind of on the announce table. Yeah, that's was really good. We've actually had a pretty good success rate of good stuff here.
Would you want to check out that Piper, Sean?
I don't know. I've got two train of thoughts. I think I want to watch a tag match.
Okay.
But then I was also wondering, have you ever watched Samoa Joe and Necro Butcher?
No. Let's do a tag match and then we'll end with that.
Okay. So I think I just want to put in the Rockers and see what we get.
Okay.
Because I think that'll be a good thing. We've had a few brawls.
Get the Rockers is La Resistance from 2005.
No, thank you.
LOD and the Rockers, 91.
Something. There's that great Powers of Pain match I'm seeing.
That's right. The unheralded classic.
For the taking.
Oh, look at this one. Rockers versus Natural Disasters. I don't know if I've ever seen that one.
What's that at? We could watch that. That could
Let's
be fun.
Let's see if that's any good.
All right.
It looks like it's from Superstars.
It's from Wrestle Jam, the uploader.
So, yes, it's just Rockers versus... I can't imagine there's too many of these. So, it's just the Rockers versus the Natural Disasters is the match. So, you ready?
Again, another commercial.
Jesus.
This one's
got
Wade.
And this is 7:09 long, if you're really having a hard time finding it, if you want to narrow it down.
Between the toilet paper and the Glade, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting some mixed messages here. All right, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. 3, 2...
Well, first, I mean, what is with this? Somebody thinks they're a Kevin Dunn-esque executive producer here with a glossy widescreen view. You seeing that?
Yep.
Well, what is? I really hate that. That's going to be constantly annoying. Do we have a date on this?
No. It looks like, I see some Sky Sports. So it looks like Challenge based on the logo.
We do have Mike McGuirk.
It's definitely Challenge because it's Gorilla Bobby. Yeah, there's a Challenge banner. I'll say that the graphics plus Gorilla Bobby screams Challenge. I can try and find the date on Graham's site.
Well, this is good. So, I mean, it's got to be 91.
It has to be late. Yeah, it's going to be late 91.
Late 91.
Look at these hats.
On with that green, I mean, most 90s right there already.
Let me see if it was Challenge on here. Does he have Challenge?
God, there's a lot of kids in the crowd with the Rockers.
What kind of gaff site
hat
is this, Graham? Does he have? Is this Challenge? It's not loading. I don't know. Let's see.
Riveting. While you're doing that, can you look up what building it is in? And
I'll see if I got it on my DVD shelf. It's,
we're shooting later in the podcast.
Right here. So it's the November 3rd, 91 challenge from the Huntington Civic Center in Huntington, West Virginia.
So we might actually get a little Rockers miscommunication here.
Right. This is pretty much right on the cusp of them about to break up.
I'm thinking we may get a little bit of foreshadowing, hopefully, leading to a Natural Disasters victory.
Yeah, so, I mean, they formed, because the Disasters formed in, like, July. So, yeah, they haven't been around too long as a team.
Yeah, no, it wasn't very long. I know that was on the year, but pretty cool angle how they form. Did you watch last week's Edge and Christian show with Gene Okerlund?
No, I'm a few behind. I'm like 3 or 4 behind.
Okay. You need to watch that because there's this great bit where they ask Gene about the XFL. And he's like, does Vince watch this show? And Edge goes, fuck no. It's pretty hilarious.
So you're saying the challenge was the same way?
No, I'm saying, if we're talking about looking up DVDs on our shelf, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, is Scott going to listen to this show? No.
And even if it is, it's set out of love. See that? I don't know if you see that LOD Rockers match up top, December 30th. That was like their final match, I think, where...
That made it on the that's where I got the miscommunication, because that was on the yearbook as well, where had a pretty good shoving match with that one.
Yeah, because they had the Fight of Survivor Series,
right?
And then that one, and then that was it. We'll see here. So yeah, this is a pretty hidden little gem here with the. We'll see what comes of it. But I mean, just the fact that these two—I didn't realize these two teams even had this match. I mean, I'm sure I watched it at the time, but. I mean, the Rockers were so good at 91. Really made out their peak year, but really coming into their own as far as being able to, carry big matches.
Marty just took a nasty bump already going to the earthquake.
Well, Disasters, too, would be in prep for a tag title feud with LOD, too, so... So Sean broke that up.
You said this was 11-2 or 11-3?
Yeah, 11-3.
So this was right at the same time Sean had that singles match with Flair, too.
Yes. Yep. He's a busy boy in the fall.
Mm-hmm. You kind of wonder what was kind of going on. I mean, who knows what was going through Marty's mind, but, you know, what was he thinking at this point in time? I mean, I could see how he could think, you know, this wouldn't be so bad, them breaking up.
Well, Sean talks about it in his book. I think Marty was pissed because he felt that Sean was kind of leaving him behind, but he felt like it was time because of Marty not taking it seriously. I mean, that's what Sean says in his book anyway.
Hmm.
He felt that, like, Marty didn't want to break up the team. He wanted to keep kind of partying and doing the thing. And Sean wanted to be more serious and become a star. So he felt like Marty was kind of holding him back, which he probably was. I mean,
yeah,
in some ways.
Maybe, but I don't know. It wasn't like Sean was an altar boy.
Right. Well, without splitting up, I mean, Sean never becomes the 300th best wrestler in the world or whatever some people claim. So.
500 wrestlers better than Sean. I was happy Sean finished 31st. Pretty good showing.
I had him
ranked number 29, so it was right around my ranking.
So it was a good little series there with Jannetty coming off the top, getting caught, and then Sean coming
in. Yeah, and this kind of can play into the whole thing, too, because this is good booking because, you know, from Sean's point of view, he can say, well, I mean, you left me high and dry, man, to get demolished by these two guys.
And they are demolishing him. Like, you don't really see this kind of stuff with Sean,
huge
I feel like.
Splash.
Taking both the earthquake splash and the typhoon splash, and that's it.
Oh, Fred Ottman just pinned Shawn Michaels. You can mark that down.
A great win for the Disasters at this point.
Right.
Trying to be established to get into a tag title feud and to just squash the Rockers on TV was a big deal, you know.
Now here comes Marty. Let's see if we get a little bit of Shawn selling there was a little. You see him quivering. That was a little touch.
Well, he's trying to be Hogan, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll try to be nice. I'll be nice to Sean. But
he's working hard. He's trying to, you know, he's doing what he thinks he's going to do to stand out.
Hell, look at this stretcher, Edner. Look at that. What is that?
It's like a friggin'
MASH unit here. My God.
I like how they didn't have any kind of ring attendant or doctor. This is the referee.
Trapper and Hawkeye to come get this. This is ridiculous. Yeah, so Sean shoves that away, pretty upset.
Well, so they're clearly trying to build him up as like,
yeah, this is playing
being tough, you know. Well, even that, but also showing that he's starting to be tough, and they're spotlighting him here more than they normally would. And, you know, in 2 years earlier, if the Twin Towers do that, they just cut away to a commercial.
Right,
you know?
It's just, yeah.
Now they're really spotlighting like Sean fighting
Eat
back to his feet.
Cream bars. All right, yeah, that was good storyline driver.
Yeah, I liked it. All right, so we're going to close with this Samoa Joe match.
Yeah. Oh, man. This is going to be good. All right, so if you just put in Samoa Joe and Necro, should say 10 years since Samoa Joe and the Necro Butcher.
Full match. Oh. Got it.
it's 30 minutes. Well, it's like a 10-minute match. We'll see.
All right, let's fast forward a little bit to the through the entrances. Let's go to 145. Necro shoves the ref down. They're staring each other.
And another freaking coupon or ad. Hopefully I'm able to skip this one.
Are we going to watch any JCW after this? They got the whole Bloody Mania from 07 on there.
No, thank you. I'm good. So we're at 145. So I'll give you a quick backstory because, I mean, it starts and it doesn't let up.
Okay.
So essentially, you know, these two guys have never faced each other. This is 2005, so Samoa Joe is not the Ring of Honor champion, but, you know, of course has the aura of the indie star of the past couple of years. Necro Butcher, crazy, you know, had his aura as well. And Necro Butcher went into Chikara for their tag Grand Prix and roughed up a couple of trainees under Joe. Like, legitimately, like, potato shotted them and, you know, was pretty rough with them in the match. And Joe got legitimately pissed. So they had some kind of legitimate heat with each other going into this match. And this was also the first IWA Mid-South show in the ECW arena. And you probably won't have it turned up, but CM Punk is on commentary. This is the weekend that it came out that he was signing with WWE.
Okay.
Like it was like the Friday before the show. The show was on a Saturday. So, all right, we can start.
All right. 3, 2, here we go.
So, and also during this match, it's kind of iconic. You hear CM Punk, he'll name drop Rob Naylor on commentary like 5 times. But this, I mean, to me, this match, like, this is a match I've shown, you know, when I was in high school in 2004 and in college 2005, wrestling was not cool at that time. Like, the ship has sailed. But this has been a match I've been able to show to a lot of people and just gotten, like, a, you know, a holy shit reaction from, because it's a pretty crazy brawl. I mean, they've already started out. Joe just did a crazy fat ass elbow suicida to the floor. Just an absolute kind of mauling.
This is the ECW arena, right?
Yeah, this is the ECW arena. Again, this was IWA Mid-South's first show. Necro headbutting and chops. Man, I love this fucking match. I really do.
Well, Necro's got shoes on too, so that's good.
Yeah, and this was actually pre-Necro being barefoot. I would say this was like peak Necro. 2005, 2006 in the CCW Ring of Honor feud. I mean, afterwards he has a lot of great, you know, very good to great stuff, but this was still when he legitimately had kind of that Sabu 1994 type kind of aura around him. And, I mean, Necro's already busted open here.
Joe's hair is very distracting for some reason to me. It's got like this weird, like, Elvis Pompadour thing going on. And yes, between the two haircuts, I picked his to be distracting, not the weird balding afro that Necro's
got. Big Green Lantern
going.
Fan there.
Oh, there he is.
Fleeing away, yeah.
Is he going to stopwatch?
Yeah. I'm sure he timed it.
Yeah, just a wild brawl so far.
Okay, yeah, that's like the first crazy spot. There's a couple of, like, completely blown spots, but this one where they actually work, that was sort of the first one where Joe goes for a power slam, but he essentially power slams Necro right on his face and then just throws a chair right at him. Completely creams him. But yeah, there's a, I can't remember which Ring of Honor match it is, but it's one of their, like, epic matches, and at the end of it, everybody clapping, you see Green Lantern looking down at his watch and writing something down. It's like, come on, dude.
It's like, give it up, like, for a minute, you know?
Yeah, it's like you can't get lost in the moment with this happening. I think it may have been like Joe versus Punk 3 or something. It's like, come on, man.
And even just the strikes have been, like, they're really late. I mean,
yeah. I mean, this was not much holding back here.
I'll leave Joe alone. His look at this point.
Six that you want to come kick your ass, man.
I love Joe. Just saying, his look was.
It's hard to believe that he's NXT champion.
I know,
honestly.
Right?
Like watching this now, 11 years later or whatever. Like, I mean, because this, like I said, this was right when CM Punk signed. So it was also when Joe was in contention to sign. A really interesting kind of point in time. Like, that's, we talked about it. We came full circle talking about it with Savage. But, I mean, he had a chance back then, and it's nice to see him and, like, AJ Styles and some of these other guys get their chance now. You know, I'm not a WWE apologist and thinking, like, you're never made it. But, you know, I mean, right. Everybody can agree TNA is what it is. So to see them get an opportunity now with the, by far, you know, astronomically the biggest promotion in the world. It's nice to see. All right, this is probably the spot of the match coming up. First off, watch this punch that's about to be, it's coming up, that there's a straight punch that's delivered when they're both on the apron, and it's just disgusting.
Okay. Yeah, I just got the Necro whipping him into the steel here.
Yeah.
I heard one of the Naylor name drops in there, too.
Yeah. It's like, I know, and Rob Naylor's not even at the show.
He's on Will's couch somewhere.
Yeah, because Punk is like, you know, that little freak is freaking out right now and all that. I mean, you know, at this point, Naylor was just a message board poster, so it
right.
was kind of surreal to hear that this guy that I read post on DVDVR and CCW fans was getting name dropped by CM Punk. It was really odd. Necro bringing in the guardrail now. This is actually a nice looking ring for IWA Mid-South. They must have splurged. They're probably sharing CCW's ring, actually.
Right. Even the video quality is pretty good on the match.
Yeah, well, this is Smart Mart Video. I mean, Smart Mart Video has pretty good. I mean, you know, as long as the arena's good and they're using their multicam, it was pretty. Comparatively, I mean, I think it was as good as Ring of Honor in the Feinstein days.
As long as we didn't get into Feinstein's private collection.
yeah. Necro's a bloody mess. All right, yeah, here we go. Watch this punch right here.
Oof.
Just fucking... and then...
Oh, Jesus. So he did a T-bone off the apron.
Yeah, he basically goes for an exploder, but again, Necro goes face first. I mean, right onto the concrete. There is no padding or nothing.
He's just a gross, bloody mess there, isn't it?
Completely bloody mess, bleeding all over the floor. Pretty sick. Can see his hair, like, dragging through the blood. Pretty gory stuff. And if you look at the time marker, we're only like 7 minutes into this match.
So you said the match is 29 or is it 10?
I'm sorry?
You said the match was 29 minutes, the whole thing?
Well, that's what the segment. The match itself is only like 10 minutes long.
Okay, gotcha.
So I don't know what maybe replays or something. But yeah, we're more than halfway through with the match.
It looks like it's just, I'm scanning. It looks like it just reshows it again or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know they had, like, on the DVD, they had all sorts of replays of all the big spies.
Yeah, it might be.
So, it was... That was one thing that I really appreciated, is the match never let up in intensity, and it ended, you know, quickly.
And here comes a powerbomb on the guardrail.
Oh, that is nasty.
Yeah, he couldn't even get him up that high. He just dropped on his neck across it.
God, no gift. Oh, that's a spot. That's kind of I remember that spot, but oh, it looked more brutal there because there is no give in that. Oh, and another little tip is, like, Necro flew in from Japan that morning, so this guy was like jet lagged all to hell.
He just went out there and got thrown on his head on the steel over and over.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
German right on top of the chair.
That it? No.
Jeez. Nah. It's good that it built sympathy up for Necro.
Yeah, the crowd chair, they were all in Joe's corner earlier.
Yeah, now, I mean, it is like a legit, like, they're making Necro be sympathetic here. It's kind of, I mean, overall, I love this match. I think it's so visceral and just really fits. Because this was, again, around where you'd have, I mean, I like a lot of course, I love a lot of the kind of indie style stuff that was going on, but I mean, there was a lot of 30-minute indie-rific type matches. You could see Joe open hand slaps, you can see the blood just going crazy, flying out. And so to see something like this with like pure hatred and legit like beef with one another was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
Joe was like completely bloody now from kneeing Necro and punching.
Oh, even
him.
That kick was disgusting at the end.
Yeah.
I don't know how Necro Butcher walks around today. Is he still wrestling?
He is actually retiring in like a month.
No, okay.
He's having his retirement, yeah. And so there we go. Necro, you know, still crawling vaguely,
right.
But
done.
Out of it, and Joe gets the kind of the TKO victory.
Yeah, no, that was a really fun match. Hopefully you guys that are listening are watching it as well, because, I mean, I had never seen it, and I'm not sure I even knew it existed, so it was it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think that's a good one to anybody can watch. Like I said, I've maybe ill-advised turned that on with, like, girlfriends and other stuff, but it's gotten over, you know, it's one of those kind of, like, when you're watching a pulp horror film or something, you know, there's something visceral about the match that does resonate. It doesn't, the old adage of two guys rolling around in their underwear, that doesn't really feel like it. I mean, Necro now fighting back, and Joe's actually the one kind of having to retreat at the end of the match.
It's the first match I'm going to show my daughter when we sit down and really watch wrestling.
Yeah, you know, her 10th birthday, you know, I mean, you know, yeah, now you're becoming a woman, so here you go, here's Necro Butcher versus Samoa Joe.
As your gift. 10th birthday gift. So it was fun, Chad.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And, you know, maybe we can do these sporadically throughout the, you know, just randomly pop up. But, yeah, fun times, killed about an hour and a half. And I enjoyed it. I thought we had a pretty good success rate, actually, with the matches we watched, too.
Yeah, Brett Berserker was definitely the best of the bunch.
No. Correct. Probably... I would say definitely the two John Nord matches were the worst we saw.
That was cool seeing him in the Goldberg one, his generic creator wrestler,
really,
nine.
No. Yeah. We actually kind of built a pretty good show, if you think about the matches we watched. I mean, we started off too high with a big main event. We probably should have started with a tag match. But,
right.
If we could have switched the tag match and Hogan and Macho, we'd have built a pretty good card here with the culmination.
Well, it was a hell of a ride. So be sure to check out PlaceNation.com for tons more audio, of course. All the, like Chad mentioned, the greatest wrestler ever. There's like 90 hours worth of stuff on there for you. Place to Be podcast, kind of, I looked at No Way Out 06 past Monday, so that's up there.
Just real quick on that, that's a show I've always thought was kind of unheralded. I was glad to hear the review of it. Y'all kind of agreed and thought that. I mean, I think everybody knows about Angle versus Taker, but if you can get beyond the storyline stuff, Ray versus Orton's a really fun match. And the Booker Chris Benoit series, I mean, you know, some people are like that with Benoit, but that's a series I've been watching lately. I watched the series all together. Charles from Pro Wrestling Only was pimping it to me. This was about 4 months ago, because it was before y'all got to Armageddon, because I remember I was telling you about that over chat, and me and him watched the series on one night, kind of like this, where we weren't on the phone, but we were messaging each other constantly, and I really like that series overall. So
yeah.
It's a good show. Good show.
It was a good renaissance for Booker, for sure. And I'm looking forward to talking about 22 in a couple of weeks. So,
yeah.
Also, make sure you check out the newest Sports Evolution. Our buddy Rob Carpenter was back, former NFL wide receiver, joined the Cowboys to talk NFL draft, Deflategate, NBA playoffs. So, a lot to listen to there. And from what I'm told, Rob gave a lot of insight from a players' association point of view when it came to like the rule stuff and Deflategate, you know, from the point of view of a player. So it was really neat. So be sure to check that out. Rob's always a great guest. So plenty to check out. Draft is tomorrow night. Chris Zellner's got his NFL draft big board, and he'll also be doing a mock draft coming out Thursday during the day. So be on the lookout for that. Otherwise, just make sure you follow us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. Click the Amazon link if you're going to be buying anything or doing any online shopping. We appreciate the kickback there. Check out the free ebooks Scott and I put together, and Jeff Jarvis, the Vintage Vault Refresh series. We're doing the Saturday Night's Main Events. Those are wrapping up soon, so that'll be available as its own book as well. So lots going on, Chad, PlaceMeNation.com.
Yeah, make it a daily stop with your morning coffee. And,
your morning scone. Yes.
All right, so that's another Chad and Brad show in the books. So for JR, this is Chad Campbell signing off.